Yo, I just power moved Devang Desai so big time. There's Cameron here, and whoever comes in tries to sit across, and he's tall. And we just made him scooch his chair down, and now I'm sitting higher than he is. How does it feel, Devang?
Pretty humiliating. Yeah. I'm just glad the listeners know that I am tall, though. So yeah. Thank you for saying that.
You are tall. You are really tall. And this feels good, being up here now, perched up. Do my bidding.
That's how we're talking right now.
No, but I also like it how it is for the camera, but it just, it is a nice feeling to be like, scoot your chair down a little bit. Hey,
Whose show is this?
Yeah, sorry, you're in my shot. Scoot your chair down, all right?
You're in my shot.
Yeah, Devang Desai is here, who hosts Kick in the Grass podcast, which is awesome. Listen to the last episode. They've got one that's coming up after today's game. That's why he's not coming out for a beer with the fellas afterwards. Very important guy in the building, just in general. I was going to write down your title, and then I went, I have no idea what it actually is. Because you have one of those like cool, multifaceted titles in the building. It's like, has the word digital in it somewhere.
I don't know.
I don't know where the other words, what the other words go around the thing.
That was one of my main requests when I started here, is add more words to the job title, that whether or not good. They apply or not. Just keep adding words.
So it's
at least 23 words, my job description.
Man, my first actual cool job here was being a producer. And at the time, they gave you business cards.
Oof.
And I got those cards, and they were, and literally it was the day that having a business card, you didn't have it anymore.
It was over.
And it was so funny because if you know how you get business cards, they don't come in like packs of 10.
Yeah.
500.
They go. Like there's some forest in that just gone now so that I could have useless business cards.
Some poor tree in
there's
Brazil
just
got
some
cooked.
Dudes exactly in the rainforest going, I hope they used our trees well to completely ruin our atmosphere. And it's just me, at just some business card somewhere that say producer of a show that didn't exist for longer than like 2 months. Anyway, that was a tough one. Before we talk about the World Cup, Canada today, some weird lineup decisions. You guys bombarded me this morning. I came in off the train. I walked in, and you guys were having hardcore hipster soccer talk. So before I stop talking, and it just becomes the podcast of the two of you, I want to say quickly a couple things on the Leafs game last night, Raps. Tough one for me on the Raps because I think that Toronto is in the same tier as New Orleans, and I've been saying for a while that if the Raps were out west, they would be getting more credit. And at the beginning of that game, it was looking kind of good. And then Zion did his thing, which was spectacular. And this is not a, this is a pretty lame take, but this is truly how I felt coming off of that game. God, I hope Zion stays healthy. And God, I just hope he can figure out how to stay in the league, because he is just one of, it was one of those nights where I went, oh, right, you were supposed to be one of the most fun guys that we get to watch. This has been a couple of years of different guys being around and having elevation and us going, oh, Jason Tatum and Devin Booker and guys who, I don't want to say do the same thing, but perimeter players. That's what the NBA is becoming. A lot of guys who can score on the perimeter and who can knock down threes, and that's where they thrive, right? That's where most of their highlights come. Even think about Luka the other night. I watched him drop 41. He's a different kind of player, but still, it's a lot of shooting. Zion is just a bit of a throwback to that bully ball inside player that Giannis is at times, although we've just grown accustomed
it's
to
normal.
Giannis.
It's
we're
now.
Just like,
we're surprised
over it.
If he doesn't do it.
Yeah, we're over it. He takes one dribble from half and then throws down a dunk, and people are like, cool. What's next? What's next, Giannis? What will you do next? The roster around him is trash right now. The Bucks roster is so mediocre that if you take them off of it, they're not favored against like anyone in the league. And we're just, boring.
Boring.
It's boring.
When he hit a free throw.
It makes sense that Zion's shoe exploded back in the day now. Now we understand that he was doing things to that sneaker that no one has done before.
Oh my God,
and
that
all
poor
of
sneaker.
The maybe elaborate hype or over the top hype, it's checking out, which is really rare to see. And I think every time that happens, cherish it.
Oh, that's it. It just, there is a little bit of extra cherishing it because it doesn't feel like there's going to be a long lasting Zion career. even when you think about that shoe, I just mm-hmm. picture all the other shoes looking at going like, you rest now. You had a hard life. you don't have to suffer anymore.
Did you see that one picture, though, of him going up for the dunk and the entire Raptors lineup is just looking at him?
Yeah.
Just looking up at him?
Yeah, he's brilliant.
Yeah.
And it is... I love the NFL and the NBA. I've said this a million times, but I'll say it again. Is I view them as League of Freaks, where it's just you get to go and watch the craziest athletes on the planet do the most athletic things possible. And in the NBA, that's even above the NFL for me. Like, that's the league of the greatest athletes on the planet. Like, my test is, if you took guys from the NBA and you said, or from any sports league, and went, hey, who could play the most professional sports if we trained you from birth? It would be the NBA.
Well, this is the entire U.S. men's soccer team argument, right? If you fielded athletes from other sports, the U.S. soccer team would be one of the best in the world.
Speaking of Giannis's, there's a great Giannis Papas joke about this, where it's like LeBron, you know, just in the box, you know, heading. It was like, who was it, Peter Crouch, who they were like, he's so tall. How do you stop him in there? He was like 6'7". It's like, he'd walk on a basketball he'd be walking on the court and they'd go, so you're the point guard now?
You're an undersized forward?
Yeah, exactly. That's it. You're not even the league medium height. So I just, seeing guys that stand out in the League of Freaks as the different tier of that is one of my favorite things. So yes, please stay healthy, Zion. And also that Fred Tech the second was real. This is where I say fire all refs and just figure out a different way. That's me, number one submission at the committee right now, where I go, yeah, that's done. No, actually, sorry. Number one is still that an umpire called a perfect game in the MLB playoffs and the other umpires went like, it's not your turn anymore. They took him out. They went, nah, I think I could do better than you next game. And clearly did not. But number two is that. The Leafs, Mitch Marner, that's the story. Because the game was pretty mediocre. It was not exactly one to write home about. But Mitch Marner extends the streak. It was clearly in his head, his teammates' head. We talked to Eddie Olczyk yesterday, and he mentioned how much your line mates factor into it. Mm-hmm. And then it was basically a direct prophecy, I thought, as to how he wasn't going
to
get it.
There's something wonderfully endearing about the Leafs almost losing the game to get him that goal.
I know.
They're like, yeah, just pass it to him. They have an open net.
Nylander was, like, could not have had a better chance at scoring a goal. That, if you would have frozen that and gone, what happens next, shot or pass, your life depends on this. We would have lost a lot of people.
Yeah.
Like, we would have lost a lot of us.
When him passing to Bunting at the end and then
that was
going
just
back
a joke.
To the bench, and then Bunting was like, I asked him on the bench, like, why did you pass it to me?
Yeah, that was a bit of a joke. What I really liked, though, and I do get a little sentimental for, is seeing how the Leafs reacted post-game. This is kind of a lame one, but this team, it just feels stressful for a long time to be a Leaf. You know, like, they've had these playoff exits, and it's always the regular season doesn't matter for you guys because this and individual stats don't matter anymore after Matthews. And I understand that. I'm not saying, wow, this is so special. This is all I've ever wanted as a Leaf fan, was to see Mitch Marner get empty net goals and carry a streak into 18 games. A streak that, I'll be honest, I wasn't even aware of until this last couple of weeks. But it was just nice to see the celebration afterwards in the dressing room and Marner get mugged by all of his teammates and go, yeah, okay. Everyone always thinks being a professional athlete is a dream. And hey, wouldn't it be so great to be a professional athlete and play a kid's game as an adult? And I liked seeing just a moment where it was, everybody was a kid. Everybody was just doing the same thing that you would do to a teammate when you're 12 years old at the NHL level, just throwing water on somebody and them being happy. And Marner in his post-game media comments just being very excited. And I don't think he's excited because he got 18 points. I don't think he ever cared. I think he's excited that the city is really embracing him right now, that the fan base is excited for him instead of just kind of tearing him down, which has been a lot of his career since he signed that big contract. That his team is not stuck in controversy or one thing after the other when it comes to people, just ripping them as a group. That there's no referendum on them as a team right now for just a little while, that they kind of have this oasis in a season, and I like it. That's it. That's all. I just like it.
I really like how Morgan Rielly was in the dressing room, too. You see him in the back in his full suit, and he goes in there as well. Oh, my God, a boy.
As the only time I remembered that He's still Leaf. We did this in Leafs talk, but it's been really bad for him how...
They look fine.
How fine they look without him.
Yeah. Victor Mete season.
$8 million in Victor. Yeah, I did. I have bought Matt Hollowell stock. Yeah, I bought it. But it's very much like... It's basically crypto. It's up and down. There's a lot of volatility. You have to be very like you can never sell. You have to hold. You just have to hope and pray that something works out there.
The slap pass, we definitely peaked. The FTX crashed after the slap pass.
Yeah, it was a really nice moment though.
Yeah.
It was a really nice moment. Here's the thing. I like guys who are decisive, and I like guys who have really nice touch where you can just tell, or skill. That's the thing I really like about Matt Hollowell is, and I compared him yesterday on Leafs Talk to a trick shot pool player where you look at someone and go, you can't do that. You're not going to manipulate it that way. And if you watch some of the passes even that he makes off the boards, he's really fun to watch when he's going, you know, north. It's just when he's in his own end, I don't know if there's anything you can do about that. I don't know if there's any amount of practice that you can do that changes that or... it's got to be an incredible amount of upside offensively, more than what he's doing right now to counteract that, which is why I asked Bourne yesterday, can you be a guy if you're just a regular season guy?
Yeah.
Is that good to have players like that? I think so, probably for an entire regular season.
I'm looking at Mike Green and the hopium is high. I'm like, can he be Mike Green 2.0? Mm. Small dude, can skate really well.
I wouldn't
good hockey sense.
I don't think the shot, though.
True.
Yeah.
The shot was the game
the
changer.
The shot pass, but the shot was the game changer for Mike Green. Mm-hmm. Like, that was it. That was the one for him. All right. So we have this Canada soccer game today. And that's why, you know, I wanted both you guys, again, just take over. I'll try to join these guys before the show. I'm trying to get ready. And Joe is so excited by soccer that I gotta calm him down. I gotta sedate him essentially whenever he gets around.
You gotta tie me to the chair.
Whenever he gets around somebody else who knows everything about soccer, he's starting to talk about Morocco's manager and how he wished he got better.
Nailing the pronunciation.
I'm just sitting there going, this is not the thing I need right now from you, Joe. But it's fine. You can talk about Hodžić. You can throw your takes in there if we have time today. I kind of thought that the lineup today was going to be, hey, we're not giving up on this because we desperately want a result. And we are going to make sure that as great of a career, as many caps as a guy like Atiba Hutchinson has had, it's going to be about guys like Kone today, the future looking forward, making sure guys get a little bit of experience so that, hey, 4 years from now, which is becoming the goal, or 2 years from now, hell, Gold Cup, like that... The future tournaments are what Canada is caring about right now. And if the result is secondary, that development should be primary. And I can't tell if this is a good thing or not, that you're showing some respect to some guys that have been long-term fixtures of the program and who did make it to a World Cup by putting them in here. If that is good for your culture, the lasting impact on Canada soccer. But this to me is kind of, as a sports fan, I'll speak with hyperbole, a bit of a nightmare. I want to see the young guys play, and I want to see you put your best foot forward, and this kind of feels like you're doing neither of them.
I'm caught in between because I think I was with you in the beginning. Play all the young kids. This is about the next tournament. This is about the next 4 years. But as the days have gone on since Sunday, I'm looking at this game as a cup final for Canada. I'm looking at this game as the result does matter. And I think there's a couple reasons for that. I think the stakes of Morocco being one of them.
Yeah.
Morocco needing a point at least. Mm-hmm. This isn't a dead rubber. There is still something very much on the line, at least for your opposition. I think for Canada, getting the goal against Croatia was great.
Yeah.
But even just manufacturing a point here, I think is important. I know narratives are overblown a ton, especially in soccer, especially at World Cups where it's all about storylines.
Yeah.
I think you go for this game. But that being said, this lineup to me is kind of halfway in between.
That's it. That's what I'm saying. This is the worst of what this is what I don't really love, is if you're going to go for the result and you're going to play all your best guys, great. Do that. I don't care. Then fine. Then if Kone has to sit, or if you don't feel like he's the guy for today, fine. This just, you're like you said, caught in between. When is that good in sports? When do you like saying that?
Never.
Yeah.
Almost never.
The other thing though is there's something to be said about giving the kids a chance. I think the goalie was the one I had the question of. Dan St. Clair, he will be there in 2026, most likely. Goalkeepers in general, they play a bit longer. Their peak is probably towards the end of their 30s. So I think it's safe to say Dan St. Clair will be playing in the 2026 World Cup. So with that in mind, get him some minutes against Morocco. But Do you think
he has a chance to be the actual guy, though?
He definitely has a chance. He's shown a lot of promise as a young guy. It'd be him and Maxime Crépeau, I think. It's going to be one of those two.
But I look at what happened against Croatia and some of the abuse Boyan got on the pitch as well, and I'm wondering if John Herdman's like, you know what? That was a terrible experience all around, not just on the pitch. I want you to leave Qatar with a good feeling, and that includes starting the last game, because since for however long you've been the vanguard in net, so I'm giving this to you. He's caught, JD, between respecting some guys and I think wanting to give some guys some run out here. Like Marc-Anthony Kay, wonderful human being, but he hasn't played well in a few months now.
Yeah.
And now he's thrust into this starting lineup. It's a big ask. Okay. It's a huge ask.
So obviously when it comes to soccer tactics and guys play, I usually try and really reserve comment on a lot of it because I'm not experienced enough to know a lot of this. I listen and I try to read as much as I can. I try to watch more games to make sure that I can be as informed as possible. But like when they lost to Croatia and people were starting to comment on Herdman's tactics, I just didn't lean in on that. I didn't want to be some poser who's going, yeah, I was thinking that too. That was the way that they were going to be, you know. That's not who I am. I'm a big fan of Herdman, though, and I spoke about a week ago about how maybe there's a little bit of potential in sports right now for someone who is a master motivator, who connects with people as a manager or a coach over just the direction in which we've been going, which is trying to find the next, you know, strategic genius in sports. That in our search for advantages at times, and this is across all industries, sometimes you just forget, hey, actually, you know what worked for a really long time is someone who is really good at connecting with people and motivating people. And that a lot of, at the end of the day, some strategy ends up going out the window and maybe you actually end up like, yeah, look at the Chargers, right? You've had kind of Justin Herbert stagnate a little bit this year. Their team has had some up and down moments with their coach. They've had guys who have publicly dissented on Twitter against some of his decision making. And yet you have other people that go and look at Brandon Staley and say, no, he's the guy who has completely restructured their organization when it comes to their use of analytics and their models that they're going to end up using. Sure, fine. But I do wonder if one of the drawbacks of going with a guy like Herdman or having a guy like Herdman is a situation like this where you aren't as cold-blooded, cutthroat, whatever you need to be. You can get a little sentimental, and that's having a couple of the guys in the lineup that you see today.
I think it's fair. I think my counterpoint would be the team isn't good enough to install a master tactician yet. I don't think there's enough talent on this team to be like, you know what, we can...
Oh, I'm not advocating for his replacement. I'm saying that this is kind of the one area where you go, oh, you wish this could be a little better. Do you worry about sentimentality, I guess, with a guy who seems to be, very emotional, sentimental, however you want to phrase it, that stuff like this can be a little overwhelming on a massive stage like the World Cup?
The Croatia game is a great example of that. I think Atiba getting his 100th cap, a big story, a big moment for all of us. The fact that it's taken this long for someone to reach that mark for Canada is a big deal, I think, and also an indictment maybe on how long it's taken us to get to that point. That being said, he hasn't played a lot at all in the last 6 months, and he had just played almost a full game against Belgium as well. It didn't seem right to play him in that game, and we weren't the only ones saying that. So I do think sentimentality took over there for him. And it took over in a couple places. I don't know if Junior Hoilett should have started last game. I don't know if he should start this game either. I think you've got other options as well. But he's got experience and he's been there. And he's one of the first guys, one of the dual nationals that did make the choice. So, hey, let's pay him that respect. It's tough, man, because, again, sometimes it's almost bigger than the game. And though I call this a cup final, this is the last chance saloon for a lot of dudes. This is the last chance you're going to see a lot of these guys at this stage. I was looking at the beginning of this qualifying run for Canada in 2018. Five of these guys haven't even played for Canada yet at that time. And here they are now playing for Canada here. So a lot can change really quickly. I wonder if John Herdman's also looking at this as maybe his last chance for Canada on the big stage, because who knows what the future brings as well based on some of the quotes he's made recently.
Yeah, 4 years is a long time. And I like how you brought up tactics too, because I think that's a really big deal in soccer now. Like, there's been a lot of 0-0 games in this tournament, and you've mentioned it before.
My still, sneaky
the bane of your
soccer
existence.
Troll. Yeah. No, comes out every once in a while where I go, oh, this is 0-0 a game of tournament. Okay, great.
Yeah, but I will say, like, there's a reason for that, where today's soccer is very tactical, and there's a lot of ways that teams can exploit other teams and find a way to get results. When in previous years, it was almost seemed like it's not like weaker teams wouldn't try,
right?
But it seemed like they would almost roll over and be like, well, you know, we're going into this against one of the top teams in the world. We'll just go out there and have fun. Whereas now it's like, no, if we play a low block fullback, I'm not going to go into all the terms, but like if we play this way, we can somehow get a result.
You were about to get your mic shut off. So
I was very close to it.
Really close. I did the eyes up, looked at like my sniper back there, Austin Mackey. I was like,
get this guy off.
I was like, do we have the shot? Anyway, sorry.
But
finish the point.
I just want to say, I think a lot of the criticism of Herdman was a little too far. People were questioning whether or not he should even be Canada's manager past this point. In 2026, like I said, 4 years is a long time, and he may not be here, especially like Devang said with some of the comments he's been making, but he's led the team very well. He took them from 91st in the world all the way up to 41st in 3 years, which is ridiculous.
Hold on, I'm confused as to why we're even here, though, because, like, no, I'm not advocating for Herdman.
No, I'm not saying
you are. Very clear. I'm not advocating for, first of all, when I think about firing managers or coaches, it's usually, okay, have you done something egregious?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Has the team taken a massive step back? Do they look completely checked out? Like, that was why I wanted Charlie Montoyo fired.
Yeah.
Is the team just did not look like they were responding to him whatsoever for a long stretch, and they had taken a step backward in a sample that was legitimate enough for me to go, okay, this just needs to change. Or the other option is you present me with someone who is going to be better. And why that person's going to be better. Mm-hmm. There's no Herdman conversation for me because it's very clear the program has escalated to this degree that he does have buy-in from his players to an astounding effect that he is a voice of reason and stability in a program that does not seem to have a ton of that in Canadian soccer.
Yep.
Like, no. There's no it should Herdman go conversation. Yeah. I think when Devang's mentioning that, it's still the possibility of he could end up taking a club job.
It's not him being sacked either, right?
No, it's him taking another job.
I wasn't implying that you said it or Canada wants to fire him. I wasn't implying that.
And if anything, when it comes to the tactician thing, it's hey, if that's actually a spot where he's not great, make sure you have someone beside him that is great at it who he trusts.
I just think there's a lot of people questioning his tactics from the Croatia game, and I think a lot of it was over-exaggerated a little bit because Canada, at the end of the day, just got outclassed by a team who was much better than them, and they just didn't have the resources to, like, maybe you start Adekubi, maybe Højlund doesn't start. There's some things you do here and there.
Yeah, but then you beat Croatia, no.
And realistically, what are you supposed to do when your best midfielder's hurt halfway, 30 minutes into the game? At a point in the game when you were still looking relatively decent, the game basically
first
changed
25 minutes
when Asakio got hurt. The game basically flipped on its head, and that's not that surprising, but what do you do tactically? It's a fair question.
His midfield resources aren't simply not deep enough. Kone is not ready to be that guy. Marc-Anthony Kaye has not been that guy for a couple months now. Like, what is Herdman supposed to do in that scenario? You can't run Astakio into the ground and completely ruin his leg for the rest of the season. Like, he's still going to go back and play. And Atiba, unfortunately, Kovacic just kind of had him on strings.
The criticism from, like, because I think I can kind of dumb this down. The criticism when it comes to tactics like that is what you just said, though, where you go, oh, there's a lot of nil-nil games.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of ways that teams can kind of cover up over their lack of talent and make sure that a game is not played this way. And Canada is very much front foot attacking. And hell, he came out and said it again today, which is good. I would rather them play to their identity.
Yeah.
But you also need to be flexible. And if you were going to say, hey, a lot of nations are figuring out ways to paper over their lack of talent be at the very top, and the way forward with that is to have low event, low scoring games, then it's at least, I would say, a little fair to say, well, then where were some of the adjustments to try and cover up some of those sore spots other than having Tejan Buchanan? I wonder how far he ran, you know, like during that game. I'd love to see his chart of just total distance track. What are that sports logic that does those things of just, hey, how far? So, because that seemed to be the only thing was, hey, Tejan, what we're going to need you to do is run the whole game.
play offense, but also help Alistair Johnson a lot.
Be back here notably for the entire game. Anyway, do you think, Devang, what do you think the odds are? Let's play fun that he ends up staying, because it was weird.
Yeah.
It was weird seeing his media conference and seeing headlines of John Herdman will be the manager.
Conflicting headlines.
In 2026.
Yes. Google it. Anybody listening to this, like, Google later John Herdman, Canada, and see what comes up.
Yeah.
You will get people who wrote Canada uncertain future with John Herdman, or he's back as the manager. Like, genuinely, there were people that wrote that headline of he will be here for the World Cup in Canada.
Very confusing. I listened to Jeff Blair on your show, JD, yesterday.
Yeah. He's great.
Amazing. I think it's a 40% chance he stays. I think the larger part of me thinks that he won't be the manager by 2026, and it'll happen pretty soon, as in next year. That
so why does it happen?
Mm-hmm. Nick Bontis, he alluded to that, the fact that they've had the contract with Herdman, he signed a new deal, but things change. He'll come to them. You never know what could happen. And he's alluding to the fact that I think John Herdman's going to be presented with a better deal. If not now, pretty soon. And whether it be a championship club, whether it be a Premier League club, who knows? But I think the term of what he has and what Canada Soccer is offering, I don't know if they'll be able to match even a Sunderland, as you guys mentioned.
Money or just
the entire project? I think the entire project is something else as well. They have to show John Herdman that they're serious. And that also means doing things that I think they've been apprehensive of doing. Yeah. And that involves restructuring pretty much half of Canada Soccer, if not more.
See, this is what scares me.
If he comes to them and says, hey, I want you guys to make some changes in the back end, and this means this, 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 to this, what's easier for them to say no and go their own way? Probably. And what I've seen recently from them is that's usually the course they take.
Dude, see, this is what I brought up with Blair yesterday, the scariest part of all of this for me.
Yeah.
My optimism side goes, maybe with all of the public pressure on Canada Soccer that's resulting from this World Cup, and I will say that this is kind of what stinks about having them already be eliminated and their final game be one where people are going, sorry, what's happening now? You know, I am very curious to see what happens with the coverage of this program moving forward. Because even Hockey Canada had so many things happen because why? It's in the dark unless a tournament's happening. And then usually when something happens and there's a high event, people focus on it and go, how are you using these resources actually? Sorry, all of us have busy lives and there's a billion things going on. And we all have like 8 subscriptions to different streaming services while trying to watch sports. And Twitter and TikTok and all these different distractors that it's hard for me to envision all of a sudden us becoming a nation where next week people are going, Canada Soccer, we demand for you to open the books and tell us who the management is of this group and who's doing what and who's in charge of what department. We're not going to do that. My hope is just that there's actually a little bit of fear from some rational actor up top that goes, I don't want to end up a couple of years from now with panic around Canada Soccer and having lost all this momentum, that there are real stewards of the game that believe in it enough to say, we need to accept what we don't know and what we haven't done in the past and what needs to change. Mm-hmm. And that listening to smart people, maybe like John Herdman, who've been around the Canadian soccer for a long time, that they have a lot of valuable input to give, and that keeping someone like that around at the cost of some middle manager moron type is probably the best course of action, right?
But the promising thing is that they've done this once already. When he got offered the England women's job, they're like, okay, we need to keep you. What do you want? He wanted to coach the men's team. Here we are. That is a good sign to me. And I think the profile of this program raising to where it has is another good sign, because if they lose this battle again publicly, might be the death knell for Canada Soccer based on the PR we've seen in the last year and a half.
That made me feel broken in my heart.
Yeah. I was about to say. But,
no, to JD's point, the next match for Canada after this is Curaçao in a Nations League match on March 25th. Mm-hmm. You have to keep that date in mind. Well, by the time we get to March, how much momentum have we kept? Because overall, in North America, I think we're on the right track development-wise. What MLS Next Pro is doing, what CPL is doing, we're going to the right place. But that investment and that funding, if it's not there and we lose interest and stop talking about these things, that fear is real, JD. And I don't know what happens.
Curaçao looks beautiful, but
I would give Herdman more than a 40% chance, I think. Not anything higher than, I think, 60. But there's definitely going to be a lot of interest from a lot of clubs in England.
Okay, again, everything that so I'm perfect example of the Rorschach test for this media stuff. Because in my mind, I go, this is the way I've always looked at it is, hey, maybe, and this is probably dumb and not ambitious enough for a guy like Herdman. I think about security and how if he's here over the course of the women's program elevating to a place where they can win an Olympic gold and becoming, you know, a top tier program in the world, going to the men's side and getting them to their first World Cup since 86.
Yep.
And then being here where there's going to be games on home soil and there's going to be unmatched. You think that people are excited for it now and there's 4.5 million people that are watching? Yep. 4 years from now, it's going to be bananas here in terms of expectation, in terms of interest. I'm hoping that how many household names do you think there are on the team right now? Three?
Three, maybe four.
My hope is by the time we hit 2026, it's like
10.
12, yeah, 10 to 12 guys that people go, I know who that is. You can have a conversation. You can throw out that name and someone might have a light opinion on it that barely tracks the sport. That's my hope. That's what I think real growth is in this country, is just a little bit more knowledge, expectation, whatever. And if you're Herdman and you're here and you're a part of that, you basically have this incredible safety net of, one, you have incredible power throughout Canadian soccer for forever. You can make these kind of demands. But two, is just like, if you really do want to make a home here and you want to be Canadian, it's like, yeah, you're going to be mega
It's on the TV
rich.
Right now. John Herdman. I'll be the coach in 2026. The quote is at the bottom there. It's just funny. It's playing as we're talking
and
about
Sharman
it.
There's a good chance we'll have a different manager by 2026.
Exactly.
Anyway, this is the Google search come to life for
this hurts.
The algorithm.
Anyway, I was just curious as to what the main impetus for him to go is, because, yeah, I get wanting to go to a big club.
And to back you.
But is it money?
The job is way different when you're managing a club. Like,
I would argue, if you're a manager
of a national team, it's not cushy. There's pressure. Yeah. But it's a lot different. Like, you're traveling around basically watching other people play soccer. You're watching your guys play in their club teams. You're making relationships. You're going for dinner with them. It's a lot different. If you're at a club,
you see them every single day. You're in the locker room every day.
The pressure on you is just steadily rising until it gets to a boil on each match. And I think at Canada, he doesn't have that. And to support your point, comfort-wise, it's pretty comfortable. But I don't think he's that kind of guy.
No,
that's why I'm
saying
it.
He doesn't seem like that at all. Although my pitch to him to stay with Canada is going, hey, John, you know, you could be a bit much. People seem to love you, but that whole thing that Devang just outlined of every day you're with the guys.
Yeah.
You can't be.
Are you sure, man?
Yeah, like every day you're going to roll in the office. You'd be like, all right, here's the thing today. We're going to win the day. And I'm like, ugh, this guy again. We've lost four games in a row. We're Sunderland, okay? Like, this is not.
Well, the one thing that does worry me a little bit is there's teams in the world right now that are a little bit of a project.
Uh-huh.
And Herdman is a project manager / builder. He's done it three times in his career now. And as a manager and a player, you always want to play and manage the best clubs in the world. Canada's not there yet. So you wonder if Herdman gets another offer across the table, especially from a club in England where he's from. You wonder if maybe he's like, okay, I'm going to go. Like, I left Canada in a good place, like he did with the women's team, and now they won an Olympic gold with
Beverly
Priestman.
Yeah, that
Beverly
is a nice
Priestman
thing to, ever, to always
manager.
Be like, I did this, and I left it better than when I found
because
it.
Because he managed the women's team, and then Beverly Priestman comes in, they win the Olympic gold with her as the manager.
Yeah.
And then now he's built the men's team. They're now on the eve of being a top 40 ranked team in the world. They're probably going to go to the World Cup in 4 years. They are because they're hosting it, but they'd be good enough to go anyway. And you wonder maybe if a better offer comes. He's like, I've left them in a good place. I'll even help name my replacement, but now I want to go take on a new challenge. Because Graham Potter did it this year.
Right.
He was the manager of Brighton, completely transformed that team. And everyone's like, Brighton was one of the best teams in the league. He gets the Chelsea offer, leaves immediately.
How much money is involved in being the manager of Sunderland versus being the...
Manager contracts in soccer are typically kept pretty hidden. Like, you don't usually see them.
But are we talking about more money? Like, is there an amount of cash, essentially, that Canada Soccer can offer where it goes... This is stupid for you to leave. Or does that even make sense for Canada Soccer? Is that misappropriation of funds? Like, they're getting $10 million, right, for this World Cup or over that?
Yeah.
Which actually kind of sounded low to me, I'll be honest. I went and went, from the World Cup? That's all you get? $10 million?
I mean, $10 million for getting grouped is not,
it's
not that bad.
I'm just saying, again, this is a newbie who goes, that's what you get? I thought it would be more. You guys rigged it to go to Qatar for $10 million bucks? Like, that's all the Qatar you can get? That's like one hotel that they built there.
I not confirmed, but I've seen reports. It's around $500K he's making now, maybe a bit more than that.
And then what do we roughly estimate the guy that is in Champions Soccer League, or not Champions League, sorry,
the
championship?
Yeah. English clubs typically offer for much more than $1 million.
Okay.
I'd say, like, let's say it's not Sunderland. Let's say it's a West Ham
Aston
or Premier
Villa.
League club.
My team.
Then we're getting into different numbers and different sums and different ideas. Like, I think the championship.
You think that's on the table?
I think it definitely could be. Because some of these clubs, like an Everton, a West Ham, a Aston Villa, like, there's they're clubs that are big, but then they're on a little bit, like they're falling down a little bit. Newcastle finally got their guy with Eddie Howe, but I would say previously it would be him, or it would be that team as well. It's teams that used to be big, and now they're a little bit of a project, like I said. And John Herdman has proven that he can take a team and build it from the ground up, and they can offer more than what Canada Soccer is offering.
Joe, your thing seems completely dead. I'm on Devang. I think you're being generous with the 40% all of a sudden, like trying to sift through this again as a dummy.
I'm just saying. What's the reason for him to stay?
Sentimentality?
And my biggest thing is 4 years is a really long time.
It is.
Like that to me is the biggest reason I think he won't come back, because to plan out and to plot out where Canada will be by then, I'm not that hopeful in the organization, but I'm hopeful in the infrastructure, if that makes sense, of the players in Canada and the leagues we have and the people we have in certain spots. But the infrastructure and the organization of the CSA, I'm a little scared what it's going to look like in 4 years, to be honest.
I'm terrified. I'm also scared at the idea that the story with the players before they got to this World Cup was they're all pissed.
And the women's players as well, talking before the World Cup, being like, well, Fonzie got the deal done when he came to them individually.
Yeah. Did you? I don't want to misquote who it was, but I saw one of the players from the women's team being asked about the World Cup on the eve of it and speaking about it and saying, I'm a little torn. Because this is great. It's a celebration of the sport, but also it's a reminder of kind of where things are at right now with Canada soccer. And it brings up a lot of, she didn't use the word trauma, but something along those lines of this brings up a lot of just, unhappy feelings. And I went, we're in a World Cup and this is a polarizing thing for some of the faces of the game in our country because they're so nervous about what's going on behind the scenes. This is what I'm saying. I don't think that we're a big enough. You guys talked about a ton on the last Kick in the Grass. They need to be able to get dual nationals, right? Yeah. They need to be able to attract more dual national players for this program to take another step. That's pretty clear. Development is important, but making sure that Canada is an attractive place for people is going to be key. And if your entire organization is kind of trash and it's the state of what it is right now, and then you're going to lose the likes of Herdman, who
your best salesman. Exactly.
The guy that people want you to sit down in a room with and who will give you the real good pitch.
Yeah. Well, Herdman was responsible
God,
for the
this sucks. I thought today was going to be like, hey, what do you guys care about watching today? And then this became a referendum
became
on
a
the
huge
program.
Herdman discussion.
That $10 million they're going to get. I also think the women for winning the gold got far, far way less, which I think was another comment as well. That $10 million they get eyes on that, people. Get accounting eyes on that.
Get KPMG on that.
Get all the accounting people you can. I want to see where that goes.
Someone have it in a safe, not at Canada Soccer.
I need to see where that cash goes for me to feel any sort of comfort moving forward.
Well, and just so people know,
I don't know why that's such a difficult ask in 2022.
The transparency.
Just some level of, especially, again, coming off of the Canada. These are very different issues, but out of the Canada hockey thing, it's kind of, sorry, how much money? Wait, you guys were getting what?
Say what?
And then it went where? And you guys were able to do this for how long exactly? Without any turnover or people within the room going, hey, you know, maybe not. That would be enough for me to say, hey, let's have some of these organizations have to open up the books. Can we just get a couple of smart people to keep some eyes on this? Is that just an impossibility? We can't get this to be a bit of public record?
Yeah.
I don't get it. Well, it doesn't make any sense.
Just so people are aware, like John Herdman, you mentioned him being your best salesman and the dual nationals. Like he was critical in getting guys like Ike Ugbo, Ayo Akinola, and most importantly, Stefano Eustáquio from Portugal. It took him over a year to convince him.
Boy, and Eustáquio is
And Eustáquio is a very good player. He's balling in Portugal right now.
That's like, it.
That getting him was so key. Like you mentioned the Croatia game. As soon as he went down with the leg, like
Dunzo.
The game changed.
Dunzo.
Well, he's one of those guys where it's so funny, you know, going all these games live and seeing him play.
Stood out for sure.
Yeah. Oh, it's just how much he stands out versus some of the other guys. And that's what it is. That's why even an idiot like me saw Atiba in the last game and went, that's not good.
Yeah,
that's not good when the ball is moving and there looks like he's in the middle of the ocean. He's just looking for a life
preserver.
It was
the pace.
Yeah,
was
that's
just
what I'm saying. But
but
going and watching Eustáquio live with those players. I never, you know, I went to three games. I never saw Davies.
Three games. Well, I mean, he did miss seven.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. I went to three games
live. Another feather in the Herdman cap is that they basically qualified without Fonzie for half the games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, shall we talk about Morocco, though? They're exciting. This should be fun.
Well, I got two things. Do you want to stick around for the end of this?
And sure. Then,
okay,
sure.
Yeah, because we'll take a quick break here. But yeah, I do want to know kind of what you're most excited for in this game.
Because we just did a lot of. For?
No, I don't want that.
We did
a lot of gloom. I was expecting a little fun today, a little lightheartedness. The bag's got the scarf going, and it's just, hey, enjoy this because this is toilet paper after. This is going in the garbage bin after
this.
I didn't expect the conversation to go in this direction.
No, neither did I,
but it was fun. Kind of. Anyway, quick break, then we'll come back and we'll talk about what we're looking forward to this one in Time for Action.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The Bang, Jobo, myself. It's Time for Action, brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings app to get in on the action. Must be 19 plus, must be in Ontario. Please play responsibly. So, I can't tell if this is a sexy game or a horrific game. Seriously, the Bills-Patriots, it sounds so great on paper, and the line keeps moving towards the New England side of things. I think it opened up at 6, and now it's down to 3.5.
I think it was 7.5 earlier in the week, because it was a full touchdown.
Okay. So I've heard that a lot of the Bills players are sick.
Right.
Yep.
They lost Von Miller.
Yeah.
But they're also getting... Yeah, but they're getting healthier on defense, too. Like, they're getting a lot of guys back this week, and so... Anyway, I'm just very confused by this line. I know, Devang, you are a Bills fan.
You know what I think it is, though? I think it's because Buffalo pummeled them so badly in that playoff game last year, the idea is that Bill Belichick will not allow his team to be pummeled again in the exact same way.
Yeah.
And the Bills, Josh Allen has half an arm. Like, I kind of see this being tight.
Did Josh Allen half an arm thing, though? So far, he was slinging it when they were indoors. I guess maybe this is a little bit of the elements thing that they're going, hey, it's a bit colder, it's outdoors, it's an actual tough game. And yeah, when I'm saying they were get healthier, Ian Boffo's like Mr. Meyer, it's like, yeah, they're getting Greg Russo back, and he's been incredibly important to them. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Their linebacking core looks like they're healthy. They're heading into this game. This is just, to me, I've never been a believer in because a team got smashed the last game that they want revenge and they get it the following one. It's that, no, what you saw is an indicator of what is probably the talent disparity between these groups. So for me, I just go and look at it and say, New England's quarterback he's been so bad this year that people wanted Billy Zappi to be the guy.
Billy.
What is his name?
Bailey,
that's it.
Billy Zappi.
Zappi sounds pretty good.
That sounds like a Stephen King character.
Billy Zappi actually is kind of way better than Bailey Zappi. Bailey is a dog's name.
Billy Zappi sounds like a superhero, like a...
Bailey is not
the King's mascot, right? Bailey, I think.
Bailey is not a name for a person. That's a dog name.
It's a dog
name. Or a girl.
I will say my friend's dog name is Bailey.
Yeah. Wow.
It's the only Bailey that I know.
Yeah, no, it's...
only Bailey that I know.
I rest my case.
Yeah, there you go.
It's
been proven.
Anyways, sorry to all the dude Baileys out there, I guess. I like the Bills tonight. I'm betting the 3.5. That's just where I'm at with this. I even actually think that the total is a little too low. This is 43.5, kind of like the over tonight, and I like the Bills. Where are you guys at?
I'm going full Bills as well. I think there's been a lot of narrative about the Bills lately. They started off pretty hot, and people had them as maybe before the Eagles started to go on their huge run. But I think before the season especially, there was a consensus that they were the best team in football. And then with Josh Allen's struggles, I know he's hurt now, but he was a premium MVP candidate. Now it seems like he's almost fallen out of the race, like Joe Burrow's ahead of him. So I think the Bills want a little bit of vengeance here. It's a division game, rival. I think they come out with some fire. And
Your fandom is just, let it hang.
More than 3.5.
So let it hang. You like the Patriots tonight.
I do. And the thing is, the Bills are 0-2 against the AFC so far. This is the first of 3 in a row against the AFC. This is the season, pretty much. Like, the division is on the line starting tonight. Yeah. It's a huge game. I think the Bills might still pull this out, but it'll be a last score, maybe a field goal kind of thing. So
you know what, though? I like when it's under -200, which right now it's -195 on the money line. I usually, if I really feel confident about a side of the bet, and it's that, I like throwing that in. I actually wish that this game was on Sunday, because this would be a clear parlay piece for me. I'd be going like this with maybe Ravens, and I'd be teasing up our Titans, me and Austin's Titans again. Austin's Titans, but kind of like every week I always watch them go, I love the Titans. I'm a Titans guy. I just wish Tannehill wasn't the guy.
Mike Vrabel is, though.
That was Time for Action, brought to you by DraftKings, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook to get in on the action. Must be 19 plus, must be in Ontario. Please play responsibly. Okay, so before the break, I asked you guys, this is a happy can of soccer talk a little bit before we go, okay? what do you care about most today, Devang?
I care about sentimentally watching Jonathan Osorio and Marc-Anthony Kay patrol the middle of the park together, two Toronto boys, two TFC boys.
The Osorio part is very nice, yes.
I think Jonathan Osorio, I was watching his press conference the other day and marveling at how far he's come. I remember when he walked on to TFC, happy to be there, but also super intense soccer player. And he was kind of hard to see the other side of him. And as the years have gone on, he's gotten exceptional at that. So I'm really anxious and happy to see Osa get the start, and also I want to see Kyle Aaron score a goal today. I think that'd be super cool as well. This guy was massively important during qualifying. I think we underrate his importance, especially when Davies wasn't available for those games. It was about Kyle Aaron, so I'd like to see him get on the short score sheet as well. That being said, Morocco has not conceded in six games. They might be the most organized team in this tournament. Yep. It's going to be hard. Like, Morocco, I think, set up the best of the three teams we played so far in terms of organization. So this is going to be tough. Yeah,
he's Jonathan David will eventually come in for Laren, though.
You have to imagine so.
You'd have to assume he comes in the 65th.
Because I wondered if it was this is a bunch of sentimental starts, and that at halftime you end up seeing some, hey, now we're going with
Definitely
Young trying to win.
I think
it depends on the game script of the first half too. But Morocco, they're a lot more organized than Canada, but their favorite way to play is actually somewhat similar too. They love using their fullbacks with Achraf Hakimi, who is arguably the best at his position alongside Alphonso Davies. Hakimi and Davies are probably the two fastest players in the world.
It's close.
It's very close. And Nasser Mazraoui is obviously very good as well. So that fullback pairing, they attack on the wings, and it's pretty similar to what Canada does with their fullbacks as well. So It's going to be a really interesting game to watch, but Morocco does have a lot to play for. They're literally fighting for a chance to play in the knockouts. A draw sees them through because Croatia and Belgium are obviously playing, and then neither of them can leapfrog each other. It's a test for Canada because you want to get a result here, and Morocco is not an easy team at all. There was a lot of talk before the tournament that it was a free 3 points.
Yikes.
Which was bizarre to see. Everyone's like, Belgium and Croatia are the good teams, but Morocco, we'll beat them. Morocco is arguably the best team out of pot three along with Senegal. So that was the worst possible team we could have been drawn with.
You mentioned the nil-nils earlier.
Yeah.
Would not be surprised at all if this was nil-nil by the time 90 comes.
Canada has struggled to score in Morocco.
Well, especially if they just need to draw.
Right, as well.
And you said this, the way that you just set this up is they're organized, they don't concede, and they have a lot to, they have a lot of stakes to not do that.
And they can defend too. They have the pace to keep up.
Okay, well, I'm down with any result, obviously, but even though what you're saying is, it seems to be true, which is that Morocco is a stronger side than they were given credit for.
Yeah.
A lot of World Cup buildup for me was, hey, Canada could get a win against these guys.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And if we're talking about just world-class powers year over year over year, yeah, I'm familiar. Hey, Croatia, I know your players.
Yeah.
I know players on Belgium. The names you just said shot through my head faster than a bullet. Like I didn't, there was no registry there, right? That's not a historically great soccer country. I do view more of a...
an equal maybe than a...
Just somebody who, so they can do this, then why can't we do this? That's one of those feelings. And so, hey, they don't want to concede, then that makes me feel even more emboldened to say, hey, go ruin their party. Go win. Mm-hmm. I don't care.
Go
beat them.
And the thing is, they've kind of shown they're willing to do that against Belgium and Croatia. So it'd be a bit hilarious if they went super pragmatic in this game when there is kind of no pressure.
Well,
go for it, right? I would love to see that.
Like case in point against Belgium, they only had 33% of their possession.
Anyways,
like they took advantage of the few chances that they had.
In some ways, this game, it doesn't mean more to me than getting a result when it counted for something. But I think that you show your character as a group
in
moments like this in sports.
Yep.
If guys go out there and lay it all on the line, which I think that part of probably maybe even the tactics of putting some of the Osorios and the Ks in there is, hey, these guys are going to care so deeply. And maybe if you are a younger player, you're not using this as a rep as much because you do want that result. Who knows? Okay. Maybe. But it's not just the character of the group. It's just, yeah, how good you actually are. If you can hang with Morocco, if you can outplay Morocco in a game that they're desperately trying to win, I think that's going to embolden a lot of people. That's going to give a lot of hope for the future. That's going to make a lot more people care. If you lay down in this game and you just stink and it's a mediocre effort from you, this is where I think actually growing the game. All these people cried about how Davies didn't go to the mix zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what actually is going to matter infinity more than that is how Canada performs in a match like this. Yes. And so to me, if you have some, what did we talk about earlier with Canada soccer? It's stewardship of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Actually caring about growth in this country and wanting people to be as invested as the people who are members of it.
Yeah.
You want to have, equity here, then go out and do something. Have a moment in the game. Look how big the one goal was. Think about how much bigger it would be if you actually got a win.
Yeah.
By the time March comes around and those Nations League matches happen, it would be wonderful if the last thing we can recall about this team is a big
going
result.
100%.
The freaking World Cup.
Yep.
Yeah.
Let's not forget, this is the World Cup. It's the biggest show in the world.
And
I just want
to
add, like,
very stoked. Cannot wait to go to the pub, watch a World Cup game, crush a pint, and sit there and scream. And then bitch about the Herdman's tactics in the bar.
Well, I just want to add one thing. Like, if let's say Canada beats Croatia, their friendly opposition will be much more inclined to play against them. Better experience against better teams.
You mean Morocco?
Right. If they beat Morocco, then their friendly opposition in the future, like teams that they're going to contact, they'll be like, oh, they beat Morocco, they can hang with us. It'll be a good game for our players. And it's better experience for the young guys as well. Because Canada hasn't previously been able to attract any good games.
I care. Win. I care. Win.
Soccer JD is here to stay.
JD. I love this arc from JD.
Great. Buddy, I'm all in. Canada's number one soccer fan. Like I said, find people who went to more games than me. I took my shirt off at the qualifier, okay? Like, I danced around in the cold.
What was the temperature, though? What was the temperature?
No, it was freezing.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, no, the Jamaica game,
that's right. Okay, yeah.
Game.
No, it was straight up freezing cold. To the point where when I was doing it, I thought, somebody might even come down there and go, you can't
protect
be doing this. It's too cold. Yeah, you got to go in.
Sir, here's an ambulance.
Yeah.
Protect yourself.
Sir, we appreciate that you're clearly the bravest guy in the stadium and you're the toughest guy here, but we got to escort you into the heated lounge. Anyway, quick break. We'll come back. Elliot Friedman next. Yeah, no, I got the adventurer. Searcher of different genres. Fringe music, no big deal. Don't want to overly brag about it. I'm just better than a lot of people out there. It's fine. Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts. I have no idea what music you listen to. I feel like you're just too busy that you never do. All you listen to is the ringtone of your phone going off constantly.
That would not be inaccurate. Yeah. I'm all over the map, JD. Yeah. I listen to everything.
Nice. See,
I am non-discriminating. Yes.
Is The Adventurer in your Spotify rap. That's the coolest one again. And yes, I posted it because that's what you do. You stunt
on
socials.
That's what you do. You have to show it. So you're cool enough to have a Spotify rap.
Yeah. Yes. And you know what I also noticed is that the people who didn't post it, who are the big time quote unquote music aficionados, I kind of want to see them open up the books. You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, what are you hiding? That's all. I'm a skeptical person. I want to know.
Well, they don't want you to know that it's Taylor Swift or something.
Exactly.
Like
exactly. It's always, hey, I'm listening to this cool thing. And then in actuality, it's just, no, you're still listening to the same music you were listening to in grade 9 like the rest of us. Anyway, tell you for your 32 thoughts. So I want to start with the thing that you wrote in your latest piece, which is, I'm just going to quote you. I'll read this out. Quote, they have time to let this play out, but it's safe to say they will save their best assets for whatever they feel they might need on the blue line. This is in reference to Leafs. There's the possibility of adding a left shot scorer, but that's not the priority, I think. They'd like to show Matthew Nyes there's a path when he's ready to leave the NCAA Minnesota. End quotes. I was pretty surprised by this. I thought one of the takeaways for the Leafs over this course, where they've been missing guys and the fact that they're going to get Brody back, they're going to get Morgan Riley back, was that maybe they viewed a defenseman as a bit of a lower priority for them. So, yeah, I guess where we go from here is, what type of defenseman do you think that they're going to be trying to add?
Well, I think they're going to try to add the best defenseman they can. I think the Muzzin thing really has thrown a wrench into all that. Now, I think they've bought themselves some time. Like, these guys have played really well, all things considered. When you think of where we were about a month ago, JD, and everybody was getting it was like everybody was getting fired and tossed out of town and tarred and feathered and whatever. an adjective you want to come up with. I think that things have obviously changed. They've played really hard, considering all the injuries on the blue line in goal. A lot of their players have raised their games. I think in particular, Sandin and Liljegren have taken a bit of a step that they hoped that those guys would take. I think it's bought them some time to kind of consider what's out there. Mm. But I heard, you know, for example, I knew they were interested in Timmins. They traded for him. I heard they made a call about Frank Vatrano from Anaheim, but I don't think that they can do that. I don't think it's going to fit. But I started asking around, like, you know, what's the bigger, what do you think they're going to do? And I think they're going to let the blue line play out and say, okay, they've got a limited amount of assets they can trade. I think they only have four picks this year, and one of them Arizona's got an option on. They have some good prospects, but I think they're looking at it and saying, we want to make sure we like what we have on the blue line before we give away our best assets or move our best assets. And I think it's I think Muzzin and what he brings has left them a bit of a hole. And look, I'm a big believer, JD, that the NHL is two leagues. It's the regular season league and it's the playoff league.
100%.
The regular season league this year is fun, but there's a lot of goals getting scored. But in the playoffs, it changes. And to me, it's not just the refereeing that changes; it's the players that change. They will do things in the playoffs they will not do in the regular season. You can't play the regular season at the same intensity and the same level of anger that you play in the playoffs. So I think that's what they'll do. I think they'll say, okay, well, our first option is a D, and the Nyes thing I think is important because they want Nyes to play for them. And if he doesn't think he has a path, there's less of a chance to play with them, and he's a left-hand shot.
Yeah. Mike Fuda was on here about a week or so ago. He talked about how Nyes has been one of the best live viewings of his scouting career, watching him play multiple times over, which I think that should be, really something that Leaf fans care about, given his track record as a scout and as someone who has, done that for a very, very long time and had a lot of success in it. My thing with the Leafs is, okay, that's great to have a path for him. It's just weird to be in an all-in type of season where they have all of this cap space and, be thinking about his path forward or what that path forward has to be within potentially their top six. The blue line has been so banged up, and you're right. I think about the regular season versus the playoffs with something like Mac Hollowell, who I've been enjoying watching with the Leafs, but then you see him in his own end and you go, oh, there is 0% chance that you'll ever be in a playoff series for this team unless it's a disaster. They probably need to hedge their bets a little bit better with Sandin Liljegren, even though those two guys have looked great. And yes, Giordano still is 40 years old, and he kind of looked a little bit more last night. So you'd like to be able to maybe get rid of some of those minutes that he's logging right now. My follow-up to this one, though, is do you think that this market is going to evolve quicker, given that we are in a season, like now we're after Thanksgiving, and this is a draft where there's not just like one guy at the very top. There's multiple players.
A lot of good players.
And there's just a lot of parity this year amongst teams. And I've wondered if certain groups, by groups I mean front offices, are going to look at this and say, hey, we need to actually tank. And we need to figure out how to deplete our rosters as quickly as possible. And maybe that means a year with a faster moving market.
There's a lot of good points you bring up there. The first thing I just want to mention is the Nyes thing that you talked about there. It's an all-in year, yes, but you also have to take care of your prospects, right? You have to have an eye towards, and Nyes, like, he's a steal of a pick for them in terms of what they identified and where they got him. He's a guy who had a down year his draft year, and Toronto, that didn't have a first-round pick that year, they took a chance, and that chance looks like it has a chance to be an upper-deck home run. Mm-hmm. You have to take care of that. You have to make sure that he plays for you. Even if you're not, like, even if for whatever reason, if Dubas wasn't to come back next year, it's a feather in his cap that his staff and convinced him to do that, and he backed his staff on that pick. So you have to, you want to win, but you also have to make sure that guy is a player who performs for your organization. So you have to keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. I agree with your overall thesis on the defensemen and teams getting out of the way sooner. However, just the evidence right now from just calling around, it doesn't sound like teams are in too big a hurry to do too much. Mm. As a matter of fact, I get the sense that some of these teams that are going to be buyers, they think the market's going to benefit them because there are going to be teams that want to sell, and they think that there could be some teams that are really desperate to sell, and they think if they can slow play it a little bit, they think they'll benefit. We'll find out if that's true, but I know there's some teams who think that.
What's the value of the Muzzin contract?
Well, I think it depends. Like, you know, first of all, I don't think he plays this year, but I don't know beyond that. You know, we'll see where we go there. So that's one thing. You know, second is, you know, what does Toronto want to do? Do they want to keep it on their books to use it, or do they want to move it somewhere else? And I think the number one thing is that they're going to be respectful of Muzzin and what he thinks his situation is. So I think that's something that likely gets punted until Muzzin has made any kind of declaration or answer about his future. Like, you know, the one thing is, like, look, he's still around. And he's very important to Marner, who's playing on an unbelievable stretch of hockey right now. I think they consider that very valuable, whether he's in the lineup or not. So I think that's a factor in all this, too.
Yeah, I guess it's a little hard to get a grip on it. It seems to be close to a consensus that he won't play again this season, whether or not next year, right? What does that add a benefit to a team, given that he has taken a bit of a step back and the cap hit is decently big? I'm guessing that Toronto would happily eat a bunch of the actual dollars in a trade for a guy like Muzzin. And, yeah, he does seem to be an incredibly powerful guy when it comes to the chemistry of the room. I've talked to a few people that have mentioned that they never even explored the trade this past summer with him or asked him to lift the no-move clause because of, yeah, the leadership component that he brings the group. So, I do wonder where it goes from there. Going back to the defenseman, though, if they do try to add, do you think that, like, when you say a good defenseman or the best defenseman they can possibly get in the market, that it's a certain type of guy, though, that they view more as a fit for this group? Like, is this just, hey, if the best guy ends up being an offensive guy, like a Klingberg, that's where they go? Or if the best guy, like, what is the spectrum of that player, do you think?
I think they'd like somebody with an edge. I think they would. I think the best defenseman is what they'll try to do, I think. But I think there is a preference that's somebody with a bit of edge to them. Mm. You know, one of the guys I really wondered about, and they saw him firsthand in the bubble, was Gavrikov. Mm-hmm. That's a guy that I've really kind of wondered if he's very high up on their list. But, you know, also, like, handedness is going to be a factor, too. You know, what do they decide they need? But I think they would like somebody with a bit of nastiness to them. You know, the playoffs are a nasty place, and a lot of the teams that win, you know, Tampa's got a lot of skill, but they're mean. Colorado's got a lot of skill, but they're mean. And you have to be both in this league. You have to be skilled, and you have to be mean.
Well, I mentioned that Sandin and Liljegren have been playing better, and this actually kind of speaks to, I think, a little bit of your messaging on, hey, you have to be able to give your young players opportunities like a Nyes or prioritize some of that, because modern-day salary cap winning is tough. It requires you to do both, right? You have to be able to develop some of your better young players while also trying to win and build yourself towards the postseason. Like, winning is not easy in this league, but Sandin and Liljegren have been a bit of an example of, oh, right, when you let guys with some pedigree play and extend their legs and play more minutes, that you can see a lot of upside. Do you believe that that there have been moments where both of those guys, one or the other, have been available? Do you think that when they're assessing their trades moving forward, if they're looking to add on the blue line, that it might come as a subtraction to one of those players? I would guess more specifically Sandin.
Well, I don't think that's what they want to do. Like JD, when Sandin was unsigned into camp this year, I asked around a lot, are you going to, I mean, even going back to the draft, I think I was one, I don't know if I was like the first or anything like that, but I do remember I was one of the people as far back as the draft was on that this is going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. And And I think Sandin felt that he was worried that, there just wasn't going to be an opportunity for him this year. And I know that one of the things that the Maple Leafs were trying to sell Sandin and Liljegren on, but it was more Sandin, is that if you look at their salary chart, the only guy signed after this year is Riley. And I'm not counting Muzzin right now, but, is really Riley. And I think they were just trying to say that to him, is there's a lot of holes on this blue line going forward in terms of who we have signed, who we don't have signed. And they did not want to trade Sandin or Liljegren for that reason. Mm-hmm. So I the way they've played this year, I don't think you're looking to move either one of those guys. Look, the guy who's kind of been the one they've tried to move is Hall. That's been going on for a year. I actually think he's done a really nice job.
Agree.
In the last couple weeks, and I'm happy for him. I can only imagine the meat grinder he was going through for a little bit there. But I don't think Liljegren and Sandin, like, you're right. I don't know if they've ever really tried to trade Sandin. I know when they traded for Muzzin, Liljegren was potentially in that deal, but the Kings weren't a fan, so they didn't do it. But I don't get a sense that they'd want to move him now. He's playing pretty well.
Yeah, no. You would imagine that Liljegren, handedness, development, all of it, it would lead you to believe, I think he's the better player, that they would want to keep him. If you're Rasmus Sandin, and part of the reason that you held out is you were worried about what opportunity you were going to get. If I see the Leafs add a Gavrikov and then TJ Brody comes back and Morgan Riley comes back, I'm starting to do the math going, wait, so I start to play better, but it still doesn't really matter. I might get shuffled out of the lineup. I'm ready to play now. I prove to you that I'm ready to play now, and you're still looking for other guys. I don't want to be here. And that would be, that's kind of the domino I wonder if the Leafs would like to preferably get ahead of.
Well, I think that's a very fair question, JD. I think it's a very good point. I think though, when you're in a year where you've got to win, you've got to be a little bit ruthless, and you have to make a decision. So if Sandin has proven to you that you don't need to do that, then you don't do it. But if you still look at the overall situation and say, you know what, I don't like our mix, then you make your change and you deal with the problems as they occur.
Yeah. What about Nick Robertson? Do you think that the Leafs are taking calls on him right now?
I would say this. I think they've got to know the kid's not happy. Okay? And this, I want to be careful with this, because there's a difference between being unhappy and there's a difference between being selfish. Like, there are people who would look at this and they would say, well, the kid's being selfish because, they're doing really well and he's not happy with his ice time. I think there's a difference. He's not going public. He's not complaining. I guarantee to you every day he's got reporters going up to him, how you doing? I'm sure reporters are reaching out to his people going, are you unhappy here? And they've kept quiet. Like, he's a kid. He wants to play. He wants to play hockey. I think Toronto knows that you're getting to a point here. Look, they haven't sent him back to the American Hockey League. To me, there's a reason.
Yeah.
And that reason is they probably realize that while playing is good, he's at a point where it's not really helping him anymore. So I think we're getting to a point, JD, where if they can't find a spot for him, they know it's probably time for him to go somewhere else. But it's not the time to bitch about that when the team's going really good. And it's also... It's also a situation where there are times you've got to keep your mouth shut and let things work organically, and this is one of those times for him.
Yeah, I can't recall seeing anything anywhere where he's even made so much as any type of noise. But his brother is ripping it up. He's one of the stories this season, and he is not playing any hockey right now. He's not in the lineup. He's watching a guy like Sheldon Keefe praise guys like Pontus Holmberg, and I like Holmberg. But if I'm Nick Robertson, if I'm a player with any pride, I'm going, I'm better than him, and you love him. And sure, they're different players, whatever. I showed up to preseason this year. I tore it up, and then I didn't get a shot. And then we did get an opportunity, and I couldn't get in the lineup. And I wonder now with this Yarncroc injury if he'll get a little bit more run. and that just becomes a showcase, but that come the end of it, that's when they're going to have to make the decision.
Yeah, I think that's all fair. I don't know if I would say that Robertson is better than Holmberg. I mean, you should think that. Like, Holmberg is, I know they were really high on Holmberg also at the beginning of the year. They were really hopeful on him, and he looks like he's a player, and he's carved out a spot. I mean, the other thing, too, is Holmberg's a center, and centers always get a little bit of preference over other guys. But, again, I don't disagree with anything you said there. You should have pride in yourself. You should believe in yourself. Look, I think we are getting to a point, though, where somewhere this is going to have to be sorted out one way or the other.
So, again, this will be my last one about the trade market. They haven't scored in some years in the postseason. Secondary scoring has continued to be an issue. And this year, their top four guys all continue to go. And what you said about the blue line makes a ton of sense. It being the priority and planning for a postseason versus a regular season, all of this makes a lot of sense. But still, when I think back to the killer instinct quotes that they've had and looking for players where they've gone in for Foligno types, that if putting a lot of it on Matthew Nyes sounds good in theory and maybe he can help them, but what do you expect that left shot market to look like, or how do you expect that to develop over the next couple of months? Because if it's just me and it's just my opinion, that is still that's a priority for the Leafs this year. They've got to find more depth scoring with this roster.
I don't disagree with you. I think your theory is right. I think sometimes we have been distracted by... And you know what? I don't even know if distracted is the right word, because I do think at times they've been pushed around.
Definitely.
And I do think there have been times where, you know, like, you could go back over the past couple of years and look at some of their playoff defeats. Some of them you could say are goaltending. Some of them you could say absolutely lack of depth scoring. I'm with you on this. And I do think it's something they are acutely aware of. But I think a lot of the time, as these series got deeper and those games got more and more meaningful, they lost battles that, you know, they had to win. And I think on the blue line, and like we talked about, JD, the playoffs are a different animal. You are not going to see 9-8 or 10-8 games in the playoffs. The players change. The way the game is played changes. And you have to be prepared for that. But I think, look, they have a limited amount of capital that they can move. They don't have a lot of cap room. You have to prioritize what you're going to do. And maybe that will change. And I think they would like a left shot. They're going to try everybody out here. I mean, you know, that's why they even gave Yarncroke a look up there. I think they would like a left shot. But as it stands right now, I think they're waiting to see what they decide on their blue line first. And that's their first priority.
Last one. You've been really generous with the time today. I appreciate it.
It's good for my exercise. It's good for my walk.
Good. Okay. Hey, listen, you're walking. It's fine. Where else you go? You could have changed could have added to the Spotify Wrapped. You could have put some cool music on, and instead you did this. So I appreciate it. Are we seeing a different Mitch Marner, or just a perception switch in light of a more difficult season, let's say, for Matthews, strong team play, and undeniable numbers?
Well, I think Marner's always been a great player.
Yep.
I do. And I think Marner cares a lot about the team and the teammates. And I think he's got a huge connection to Toronto, which has motivated him in the right way to be a successful player for the Maple Leafs. I think all of that is true. I think Marner's biggest problems over the years has been the pressure he puts on himself, which I understand, and sometimes the people around him telling him things that he doesn't need to hear. And, you know, I was really interested the other day. He was asked about putting the Z on his gloves, and it's for his dog, and he had that quote about how, "My dog doesn't care what anyone says about me." And you know, I think that's the thing. I think one of the hardest things to do right now in life is, if you're any kind of a person with a public profile, is to shut out the noise. You know, JD, when you and I were growing up, there wasn't social media. There was a limited amount of noise that you had to deal with. Now the noise is everywhere. It's constant. and every day there's a referendum on something. Mm-hmm. And if that referendum is on you, and in Lauren's case, that's been happened, unfortunately, you know, if you have people filling your heads with the wrong things, then it's going to drive you crazy. Mm-hmm. And I think there has, like, if he learns to shut out that noise, he's going to be even better than he already is. I think he's a great player. You know, I saw Matt Larkin wrote a story this morning about Meyer entering the heart conversation. Mm. I think it's too early for that stuff, but if he goes that way, if he continues in this direction, he sure will be. You know, I just think for him, it's all been about shutting out the noise. Just take care of what you can take care of, because he's really good at it, and right now he's in a great place.
Yeah, see, I started the show with something about this today. I think that this has been a pretty difficult news cycle for the Leafs now for quite some time, unless you've been Austin Matthews. Mm-hmm. And last night it was just nice to see his teammates get him that moment, the way that the building responded to him hitting that point streak, and then just the clip after the game of him entering the dressing room. And Marner, he's a guy that he's got a lot of childlike attributes to him, I would say, just in terms of like his demeanor and his, and I just liked seeing the joy there. I liked seeing how excited he was in the post game. I liked seeing the way that he reacted in the dressing room. And I'm probably making a little bit too much of a deal of it, but it really just,
I
felt like a real, hey, this guy's starting to become a little bit more comfortable with who he is, his place in the team, who he is as a player, all of it. Like, that there's not nonstop questioning of him in the media for a couple of weeks. He's just, he looked like there's a lot of weight off his shoulders. And that, I think that counts for something, especially in a year like this.
You know, I don't disagree. The thing is, the one thing I would just say there is that, to me, like, because he's Mitch Marner and because he's one of the best players in the NHL, and he's a key player on the most talked about team in the NHL, there's always going to be talk about you.
Yeah.
You know, you can't escape that.
And you're not going to score every night.
And I think the thing is, like, it's like, JD, you're on social media. You're a hot take artist. You have people coming at you all the time. And you decide, how much of this am I going to buy into and how much am I not going to buy into? And I don't think it's any different for a guy like Mitch Marner. Like, there's always going to be noise around you. The question is, do you let those people have power over you? Mm. And I always tell, like, whenever I talk to students or people who are going into journalism, they always ask about social media and what you have to respond to, and do you owe everyone a response, and how you handle what comes at you. And I say, You don't owe anyone anything you don't think is treating you properly, and also I don't think you have to do that. You can't let, like, everybody has an opinion, which is fine, that's no problem, but you can't allow people to have power over you. You have to eliminate the noise and only worry about the people that A, really care about you, or B, employ you. And, you know, and that's the thing. Like, you have to limit. There's so much noise out there. You have to limit it for your own mental health. It's not good for your health if you know, every single person who tweets at you or leaves an Instagram comment, you give equal weight to it. It doesn't work that way. It can't work that way. And I tell young people that all the time. And, like, I just think you have to eliminate the noise, whether you're Mitch Marner or you're someone who works in an office. You have to eliminate the noise and limit the people whose opinions are really meaningful to you. Otherwise, you're going to go crazy.
That's really important advice. And I do think back to Mitch on your guys' podcast when he spoke to 32 Thoughts and you guys brought it up with him. I thought it was great. I thought it was one of the... That's, to me anyways, the best media moment that's involved Marner throughout his career. But really good advice. Lastly, though, I will say, I never manufacture my takes, so whenever anybody says you're a hot take artist, it's just like, I feel like that's just code for, you're an idiot, you know. You know how you're dumb.
No, I never make them up.
So when people say you're a hot take artist, I go, oh, so I'm just stupid all the time out here? Like, that's
how... This is a performance business. Like, I used to hate Stephen A. Smith, like, when he first started, and now I think he's the biggest genius on the planet. I really do. I think I was like, I remember when he was starting, I was like, this is not me, which is fine. Like, I can never do this. But now I think he's smarter than all of us.
Yeah, but he's
really
calculated.
Do.
I'm saying mine isn't. Yes. I'm just doing what I, like, this is just me. there's no plan here to any of this.
What's wrong with that?
This is just a spigot, you know? Like, this is just, you know, we're not, is that the right word? I don't know. No, it's not. There's no spigot? What's the way to say that phrase? See, I'm dumb.
This is
what I'm saying, is I'm dumb. That's it. That's all this is. It's just a dumb guy spouting off. This is what it is. Being louder, sometimes people do listen to you more. That's all I am. Loud. That's it. Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts. Thanks as always for making time, man. I appreciate it.
All right, Judy. Have a great week.
Cheers, buddy. You too. Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts. A couple quick takeaways from that. Number one, the Muzzin contract thing. I think everyone assumes that it's going to be traded. Maybe not. Maybe they do view it as that's a real thing. The idea that they like this guy enough that they view him as an important piece to have around a room that is looking a little bit more solid right now. I think the Leafs right now, they have a little bit of the Blue Jays thing going on from the pandemic year where they had to play in Buffalo and in Dunedin. And they felt like, hey, everybody's against us. And now we're a tighter group for that. The whole media fan firestorm, I'm always including fans, by the way, in this from now on. All of you on social media who tweet en masse have more reach and power than any member of the media does right now. So you're in this too, okay? You're all in that too. The media and fan firestorm at the beginning of the season, which I do think was justified based on the way the Leafs were playing, and based on the stakes of the season, mm-hmm. was some fire that this group, I think, needed. And maybe they've come together a little bit better because of it, and there is some more harmony within the group, a little bit of we've got each other's backs. And it really is important to me that Mitch Marner, one of the focal points of fan ire over the past few seasons, is the tip of the spear right now when it comes to this team's success. If you are hating on Mitch Marner right now, you are just a pure, bona fide, dyed-in-the-wool hater. You have already shown your hand. It's over. There's no credibility for you in terms of where you're standing. If you want to position yourself as, I'd like to see him perform this way in the postseason, that's fine. But you have to acknowledge what he's doing right now. He is playing like one of the best in the entire game. And it's validating a lot of his play in the past, by the way. On a team that has Austin Matthews, this is actually what I think is important. I took a little heat recently about saying who's the team's best player right now and who's the identity player, whatever. The fact that you can even have that conversation about somebody that's on the same team as Austin Matthews is the real point of impact with something like that. But yeah, I do wonder if they automatically move the Muzzin deal, or even speaking to Elliot, what the value of that is, because if you're a team and you're taking him on, are you actually worried that he wants to play the following season? I think that would kind of be a factor here. Doing right by his family, that is a Kyle Dubas tenant. Can't be in a year where you need to win. If that does become an asset or coveted in some way, obviously has to go. You've got to figure that out. Muzzin, I still believe, is in control of that ultimately. But either way. Two is that it sort of feels like, if you're reading between the lines there, that Matthew Nyes is about as untouchable as it gets. This is a year ago, he was available in the trade, or not available, sorry. He was rumored to be a part of the ask from the Chicago Blackhawks in the Marc-Andre Fleury trade. People balked at it at the time, and I mean that by fans. It seemed like an aggressive request. Davidson and Dubas. Dubas didn't seem too pleased that those negotiations got out. It looked like it was from the Chicago side of things. And granted, it looked good from the Chicago side of things, right? It was, hey, we weren't going to move off of this player to Toronto who needed a goaltender at the time unless it was for an exorbitant price. Seems to me as though he is completely off the trade block. Seems like Robertson's right on it, though, and that the days of Nick Robertson being a Toronto Maple Leaf are numbered. He'll get some burn here with Noah Yarncroc, who is apparently going to miss a little bit of time. You have no other option. You've got to play Nick Robertson right now. I'm not sure how much he can swing his value, though, because the organization seems already set on it. If that's Elliott's right, but a lot of the way Nick Robertson is, and I do want to clarify, I wasn't saying that he is a better player than Holmberg. I'm saying that that's got to be the way that he looks at it. If he doesn't, that's not good. That's really not good. If his confidence is shaken to the point where he's wondering how many guys in the lineup are better than him, and he views Malgin and Engvall and those guys as better than he is, that's a problem. He's a goal scorer. He's got to play with confidence. If he goes in here and rips it up, I don't think anything changes. And I mean that from his value standpoint. Maybe a team takes notice. Maybe another one does. But I don't know if there's going to be enough time for him to get that burn, or if there's going to be enough patience from the coaching staff, or it's not well known enough throughout the league now that he's going to be a change of scenery guy. So maybe they don't optimize that return. Either way, it's going to be fascinating to watch that. And then lastly, it seems like they will be extremely patient with the blue line thing, but it can't just be Gavrikov this year. As much as that would be nice, I stand by this. If you're going to say you're adding on the blue line, it cannot be another, you know, upper Labushkin type. It's got to be something more consequential. You've got some guys who can play meaningful minutes for you, but if you're going to try and really make waves this year, this group is good. They are a good team. They've been a good team, but they're a damn good team. They might have some flaws. They might have lost some battles. They might not have been chokers in the postseason. You can go through the laundry list of all the things that they have been. Sure, a lot of it's true, but this is a good team that can absolutely win. You can't be watching them every given night right now, seeing them be better than just about every single opponent they've played, and say that this isn't as good of a chance as any year. So yeah, as much as I'm interested in a Gavrikov type, there's got to be more. And I still remain with my strong belief that they need another winger. They need somebody else who can score. Nyes would be amazing. I hope he comes in and he's just a ball of flame. That it's the Johnsson 2.0 thing when he first came to the Leafs and was just ready. You know, when he stepped in that series with the Bruins, that he was just ready to play and contribute. But even that version of Johnsson, it wasn't enough for the Leafs. I'd like to have the bet hedged a little bit more than just relying on the shoulders of, granted, potentially, what did Elliot Coleman, upper deck home run? You got to have a little bit more there. So ideally, they do both. But yeah, always fun getting to talk to Elliot and get to pick that brain. Quick break. We'll come back. Time for action. Best bets for me going on the weekend because I'm off tomorrow.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, I'm off tomorrow. So it's time for action. Brought to you by DraftKings, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings app to get in on the action. Must be 19 plus, must be Ontario. Please play responsibly. So some best bets from the weekend. Told you earlier that when I was scanning the lines this week, earlier, there were a couple that stuck out and were a little sketchy. Now I'm getting 4 points with the Dolphins, and I'm taking them. I think that Tua is having a real moment. I think that Mike McDaniel, knowing that offense, is going to make an impact. I think that the Niners losing Elijah Mitchell is going to have an impact. Here's the thing. The Niners have been so awesome defensively. Why? They've got an awesome pass rush. Their pass rush has been getting to quarterbacks. You know what Tua and the Dolphins do well? They get the ball out quick. Mm-hmm. And I think McDaniel is going to have a good idea as to how to counter that attack. The Niners are a bit of an underappreciated team. I could absolutely see them winning, but I love when you get points and you get more than a hook for a team that I believe can win this game. So I like the Dolphins plus 4. That's going to be my bet of the week. Joe, you got one?
I still like the Seahawks minus 7.5. I think the Rams are, it's a little... like, It's a little high. Exactly. I just think it's a little high, but the Rams being nearly dead in the water, Cooper Kupp still out, like the Seahawks have juice. They have energy. We know they can score.
Yeah.
We know they can score. So I would take the Seahawks -7.5. And the Chiefs and the Bengals only 2-point separation there. -2 +2. So
I like the Chiefs.
I like the Chiefs as well. -2. Patrick Mahomes, this is going to be his game where he cements his MVP spot. So those are the two that I like the most. And did we want to do a small player prop for tonight as well, or just stick with the weekend?
Bro, your technique was trash.
My technique on what?
That was great. No, that was actually Mike McDaniel the other day talking to Tua Tagovailoa.
Oh, you're
just going to blow past the fact that Jobo here lied to the listeners about his bet.
I went back and I listened to what I
Come
said.
Come on,
I
Joe.
Said,
let's be honest.
I said the rushing yards was my main prop.
Okay, I got a lot of DMs. Okay, actually, I've got some gripes. I've got three gripes about the people in the DMs quickly here. Number one is, hey, I really appreciate those of you that listen to the show and sent me your Spotify raps with the show. Post it. Don't just DM it to me in secret. I'm not your mistress. Post it. All of you that sent them to me, appreciated. Love you all. Diehard listeners. Post it. Share it. How many times do I ask? Share it. Here's the one easiest share of the year. And you're like, here's a sneaky little message between you and I. I'm going to close my DMs. I swear to God. I'm getting tired of this. Too many people just reaching out in the DMs. Not a mistress. Number two gripe. Joe definitely cheated because multiple people reached out and were like, hey, Joe.
I did not.
There's always been question about Joe, whether he's fudged his numbers and whether he is a bit of a liar.
I can't fudge them. It's public property. You can go back and listen to it.
Now people are finally starting to get wise to a little bit of the Joe fudgery that he does. And that's the thing. This is how some people lie, is they do lie sandwiches, right? Where they put a little truth in there and they can go, I said the truth. You just had to be paying attention very closely. Anyways, Joe's a liar. That's clear.
I am not a liar.
Loosen it a little bit there.
Oh, yeah. And my third gripe is I'm getting a lot of messages about people complaining that I haven't talked about Davis Cup. I don't know anything about tennis. Why do you want me to talk about Davis Cup? Like, I didn't watch it. I barely even knew it was on TV. What do you need from me about Davis? I don't get it. I don't understand. What other, like, I know about as much about Davis Cup as I do about the British Royals, which is nothing. What do you want from me? I can't know a thing about everything. And those of you that think it's sports, it's your job. No, it's not. It's not. That's not my job. You don't know what my job is then. So yeah, there's lots of great people who cover tennis. Just because not every single person talks about the Davis Cup doesn't mean some slight to your sport. God, if you sent me a message about that, embarrassing for you. I'm just saying, it's embarrassing for you. Like, tennis is doing just fine. That moment doesn't change at all based on who does or doesn't talk about it. My God, we got to get over this as Canadians. We've got to stop with everything being a slight. Everything being disrespectful. Anyways, that's it. Boffo, Austin, you guys have best bets for the weekend you want to do for In Time for Action?
I just have a quick one here.
Okay, yeah.
Honestly, it's less than the field goal, and I just don't see the Chiefs losing again to the Bengals. It's minus...
Okay, so we're all on the Chiefs.
Chiefs -2.
I'm worried about it, though.
Chiefs -2.
I just need to say, it's part of the sketchy line squad.
It was still the Chiefs.
And it being less than a field goal, I don't care how good the Bengals are looking. I don't care Jamar Chase coming back. It's still a little sketchy. I don't care that they beat them last year. Do you guys not remember how that first half of that game was going? It was a beatdown, and then Mahomes choked and fell apart and was the worst he's ever played in his entire career. So Bengals backers are believing that's going to happen twice? I don't see it. But Vegas, the numbers, the nerds, them putting together just two?
Minus
so you're
two.
Telling me that on the money line on DraftKings right now, what is it? I got to pull it back out.
I will say Morocco just had a
minus
goal
135.
Back.
What?
Morocco just had a goal called back.
Good.
Canada caught a break.
And that's time for inaction for you. We're not spoiling the game for anybody that's PVRing or for me who has my back to it. Yeah, that's right. Anyway, it's just a little sketchy. Austin, you like anything?
Yeah, speaking of the Chiefs, I don't know if anyone remembers this Sunday Night Football a couple weeks ago. Tennessee Titans with Malik Willis played the Kansas City Chiefs, lost by 3 points.
Mm-hmm.
They're 5-point underdogs this week against the Eagles. I think you knew where I was going with this. I'm back in the Titans. I'm all in on the Titans. Remember these Titans.
Okay, there's Titans fan Austin Mackey's Here's what I can promise you right now after that speech. They got smoked. I'm staying a million miles away. I prefer when fans do the opposite side, like what I just did with the Seahawks. That's how my brain works, where you guys go, where your Jobo says, I like the Seahawks this week. It's short line. Aaron Dahl's out now. And I go, don't even say anything about that. Nobody bet that game. Everybody stay away from it. Everybody stay a million miles away. Also, this is a win-win for me, actually, as a Seahawks fan. I'd like to say that on the record, I don't care if they win or lose. So don't tweet me if they lose. Because here's the thing. Rams win. That's huge, huge for the tank. That Broncos pick, all of a sudden, I don't know if the Rams win again this year. They're bad.
They're very bad.
So if they win, all of a sudden, Broncos fall lower. A team that I wasn't sure was ever going to get a win gets one. And the Seahawks, who desperately need a little bit more talent on the defensive side of the ball, could still make the playoffs, but be a... Another loss closer to a nice, like, edge rusher would be good for them.
Make the playoffs and then beef up.
Just saying. Wouldn't be heartbroken. I'm in a win-win situation right now with that game. Very win-win. Anyways, that was Time for Action, brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings app to get in on the action. 19+, Ontario only. Please play responsibly. Okay, so there's a ton of things that we missed from this week. Yeah. I'm going to want to extend off the... We had real life draft day. with Russell Wilson. This is so good. If those of you never saw it, it's both the best and worst football movie of all time. It's just so, if you care about the NFL at all, the movie Draft Day with Kevin Costner is just as painful, cringy watch. Oh my God, it's so bad. And some of the trades that happen with it, some of the ways that things go. And it's at the expense of my Seahawks, where they make them out to be the biggest idiot franchise ever. Where they make a trade because there's a couple fans in a parking lot. The GM just panics and calls, we'll do whatever you want.
There's like 20 people outside that gate, too.
There's 5 people outside the office. We'll do whatever it takes. we'll bend right over this barrel. We'll just take it.
That movie's so good because it's bad.
I hate that movie. It's so bad. But what's the name of the top prospect? Any of you guys?
Callahan.
I was going to say, get Bo Cruz. It was another Bo. I knew it. I thought Bo Callahan, the top quarterback prospect that the dumb old Seattle Seahawks think that they're just stealing from the more about. By the way, what an insult that of all the franchises, too. It's like Seattle has won, and they had to make a movie where Cleveland is like getting one over on Seattle. I'll never forgive the Browns for this. This is indignant. This is a disgrace that ever happened. Anyway, Bo Callahan turns out that he can't connect with people. He's not a leader. And how they find out about this is that nobody came to his birthday party. And Kevin Costner susses that out. And it's, aha! And
there we go.
That's how he knows to not take Bo Callahan.
I will say, if you Google Bo Callahan, all the Russell Wilson things show up because it's just gone the comparison the whole time.
I hate making a joke that's already been done, but this is unbelievable. Hey, I defended Russell Wilson for a long time, and this is why people, the crybabies who go, Russ, you should respect him for all the good times he gave you as Seahawks fans so bad, blah, blah, blah. No, this is the point. Seahawks fans had to work themselves into exhaustion defending Russell Wilson because there were always reports like this. He fractured the team. He and Pete Carroll to a degree, but it's not a good thing that... People look at Richard Sherman and they go, oh, that's just a loudmouth guy. And so you discredit a little bit of what former teammates say. No, Seattle had what appeared to be the potential for one of the best teams in the NFL of the decade.
Yeah.
And instead it fell apart. And part of that is Russ cannot connect with people. He is, I think, as cringeworthy in private as he is in public when he's walking around in his Bronco country. Let's ride. Why do you think all these players around the league love mocking him? This is not just us. This is not just fans. He is a weirdo.
Players are doing it on the field.
Yeah.
Mocking his celebrations.
Anyway, so it's always sad when people don't go to your birthday party. Here's my suggestion, Russ. Don't go to theirs. That's what you do. You return. You fire, Russ. Anybody invites you to their birthday party because you make all the big money and they're thinking they're going to get a good gift out of you. No way. Anyway, Russ, sorry. You should have invited me. I would have gone.
Are you going to come to my birthday party?
Absolutely not. All right. I'm off tomorrow. Your birthday party. You probably still have goodie bags. You're so young.
No, loot bags.
Loot bags. Yeah.
I'm not 12.
Anyway, kind of close, though. Anyway, we got to run. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave 5 stars. I'm asking you nicely. Leave 5 stars. Share your Spotify raps. Don't treat me like your mistress. See you next week.